Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and co-hosting with me today is Kristen Polacy. In addition to her passion for prenatal and pediatric chiropractic, Kristen recently completed her labor doula training and is in the middle of all that, you had a kid.
I did.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Today we're doing something new. It's called Before and After. We are going to interview somebody who's very pregnant and going to have a baby soon before she has the baby, and then she'll come back afterwards and tell us how it all went. Our guest today is Jackie Seiden. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I love being around you. You're a TV actor now, but you are a Broadway origin.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know this, but I was a drama major.
Oh, I do know that. I think you should share your favorite monologue.
I don't think I could say it unless we go explicit.
Right.
So I don't even know why I studied drama in school.
You're a personality plus. You've got, I feel like it makes sense.
I like
you're a very
being
charismatic
other
guy.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to just be quiet and let you keep talking.
That's I mean, he could be a comedian also. He does.
Well, he's straight up a comedian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like being other people, which is why I like that. Yeah. That's what appealed to me about acting. I had a fake ID in high school, but I didn't like to drink. I just liked to be somebody else.
Oh, that's interesting, actually.
So, I'm fascinated by your career. How did you get started? When did you decide you wanted to act? How old were you?
Okay, this is going to sound so cliche. I really didn't decide. It was just always the thing I was going to do. There was no, it chose me. It's one of those things where I'm the baby of three, didn't know my place in the family, therefore was kind of always putting on a show to say, look at me, look at me. I was a singer. Well, I am a singer.
Yes.
And, I.
Wait, but how old are you when you started singing?
Very young.
Came out singing?
Yes, I developed very early. I was 5'6" in sixth grade. So my voice developed really early. So I had a voice, like a freakishly sort of adultish voice when I was 7 or 8. So I was always just singing for everyone and for everything and everywhere. And so it just was the path. It was just my passion, and I never deviated from it.
No
Everything
kidding.
I did was to serve that, but through education. My parents were the anti-stage parents.
Oh, they weren't into it?
No. I actually got signed to an agency when I was 10.
Where'd you grow up?
In Chicago, outside Chicago, Highland Park. It's a North Shore suburb.
Cold.
And
so you had to sing to
You'll
stay
hear
warm.
My accent come out when I talk about it. So
really?
I'll start to sound like
I wanna
from
hear
Chicago.
It, yeah.
And kind of got started then, and casting directors would call the house, and my mom just started hanging up the phone and said, we're not doing this. Didn't actually tell me that. Just hung up the phone, and it just disappeared. And then 2 years ago, I said, whatever happened with that? And she said, oh, yeah, I hung up the phone. That was a no. My parents said, you can do whatever you want as long as you graduate school, college, and after that, it's up to you.
What did your parents do?
My father is a criminal defense attorney.
Okay.
Wow. Which I like to say.
That's light.
But he's kind of on he's a showman, too. In court, it's very similar, except that the stakes are much higher because they're people's lives.
Right.
And my stakes are just my ego.
Well, you know.
Not the same.
The tickets on Broadway are expensive. So.
Right. So people's money are getting. Yeah,
that's our hard-earned cash.
Yeah, that's true. And then my mother taught mentally and physically disabled children, and she was going to school to get her master's. But then when she got pregnant, she decided to be home with the children and wanted to be present for us.
Oh, that's nice. How many siblings do you have?
I'm the baby of three.
Boys or girls?
The eldest is a boy, my brother, and then my sister is in the middle, and they're my best friends in the world.
Oh, that's so nice.
They are. Nice.
Yeah.
So your parents both had light and airy careers, just cheerful, happy, and they thought, we want you to do something more serious.
Yes, that's right.
Than
it's a miracle that they supported that. I mean, I don't even understand how they, I guess they didn't have a choice, but.
Were you
I'm
taking
so
lessons, singing lessons?
Yes, I started training vocally when I was 9, classically training.
So they were behind that?
Yes. Again, not sure they had a choice.
Were going to do it no matter what.
Yeah, although they did pay for it and my mom drove them every week, so.
So they're supportive.
They're supportive, yeah.
And then vocal lessons first?
Vocal lessons first. But then I also played tennis competitively. So there was a balance. It wasn't all theater and singing. I wasn't in like kids' theater school. I was doing other activities, which I think...
Are you competitive by nature?
Yes, I hate being competitive, though. So I stopped playing tennis because of that very thing.
You hate being competitive?
Yeah, I don't like the feeling of competition. I don't like tournaments. I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy competing.
But if you do it, you're going to win.
If I do it, I'm going to do whatever I can to win.
To win. You're determined. I mean, you just seem so determined.
Yes, which That's... is, but I don't, do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Does that seem, because as an actor, you're always competing. And I hate, that's the thing I like the least about it. I believe there's enough of the pie for everybody. And I love it when my friends fly and work and do well. And I think we should all support each other. And I believe what's good for the individual is good for the whole. And that's the thing I like the least.
But what competing. About when you audition against them?
You just do whatever you can to, I mean, look, all I can do is my best version of this character and try to get the role and...
And crush your friends. But you don't like that.
No, I don't like that.
I'm very competitive when I have to be. I am. Why is that funny? I'm competitive but lazy, which is a problem.
I feel you on that front.
They don't go together very well, so I end up doing things that I'm not proud of, like when I got the Fitbit to try to get a little healthier. Then my friends got the Fitbit, and they like became friends through Fitbit, and then you compete with each other. You challenge each other. And they were challenging me. So at first, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to walk 20,000 steps today. But then it took forever, and I'm so lazy. But I would do, like, my next-door neighbor went to Disneyland with her kids. I'm like, can you wear my Fitbit? And then
she walked. That is so sneaky.
Yeah, like 8 miles at Disneyland.
Well, so you crushed the competition.
Yeah, and my friends are like, how do you do it? You got the practice and your kids and you're good at birth and you walk 8 miles.
You're like, I am amazing.
Yeah, I'm like, it's hard to be me.
Well, you're savvy. You're competitive, lazy, but savvy.
Thank you. That's my business tagline.
It's putting it on my card. Smarter people sometimes happen to be a little bit lazy.
Well, thank you. Are you competitive?
Yes.
Smart?
No.
Oh,
but...
Because by the way, the lazy part is a bunch of BS because, I mean, you do more than anyone.
The busiest man
in the world.
No, but I'm lazy in competition. Like, you know, the now they're inviting guys to the baby shower. Did you have guys at your baby shower?
I'm not having a baby shower.
You're not?
I didn't have one either.
You didn't? Mm-mm. Oh, my gosh. Everyone thinks I'm nuts. It's so nice.
It's like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I actually hate attention now.
You do.
Yes.
I was wondering about that. I don't like attention, but I don't mind being on stage.
I am the same. I didn't want to party. I didn't want all the focus to be on me. It's too much. It's overwhelming. I don't like it. No birthday party is nothing.
The first thing all three of us have in common is none of us had a baby shower.
Yes.
Look at that. I'm not lazy. I'm lazy in competition. So
lazy in competition. That's clarifying.
To a baby bash that was men and women at this sort of baby shower thing, and the guys had a beer drinking competition from baby bottles. And these guys are like trying to suck the beer out of a baby bottle, and I just bit the nipple off completely and gulped it down.
Savvy.
Savvy.
This is the part.
I'm going to take it.
Yeah, you've got to add
Thank
savvy
you very much.
To the
I'm
list.
Just writing this down to tell my wife I am not lazy. I'm
savvy.
Savvy.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I respect that.
So, when did you move on to acting lessons or acting in general? Because at 9, your voice lessons.
Well, I did normal activities. I went to overnight camp when I was younger, sleepaway camp, and then tennis. But then finally, I believe it was eighth grade or ninth grade, I did the Piven Theater Workshop in Evanston, and that's when I started my first acting class. And then it just snowballed from there. Then I was just in school, and I went to Northwestern University, and I majored in theater.
Did you love it all?
I do love it all. And as a matter of fact, I became an acting teacher out in L.A.
Oh, really?
Yes. Hmm. I do love it all. I love the sport of it.
Yeah,
it's like a great time and the community of it too, you know?
So at first you're acting in like high school and college
stuff? Correct. Although, like I said earlier, my parents said, you can do this, but you have to graduate school first. So I graduated.
High school or college?
College.
Okay.
So I graduated in 3 years from Northwestern.
With a drama major?
Actually a bachelor in science.
Okay.
But I was a theater major.
Right.
And then I ran to New York not 2 months later.
No kidding.
That was it.
Ran to New York with a target?
No, I ran with a suitcase.
Yes,
my dream had always been to be on Broadway.
Really?
I was a kid. That was the dream.
Were you going to Broadway shows?
I don't think I could afford Broadway shows when I got there.
But
I'm pretty sure I didn't see one show.
To be.
Yes. I don't know if I'd ever even been to New York at that point. I just knew, I don't know, I just wanted to go.
What happens when you get there? How does it?
What did happen when I get there?
Because it's just you in a suitcase.
Oh, well, this is what happened. Through Northwestern University, they choose a handful of people to do a workshop for agents, and I got signed.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
So when I got to New York, I had an agent. And there you go. I just started auditioning, and then my dreams came true.
How?
What was your first one?
Take us through it.
Okay. So first, my first job was an embarrassingly horrible off-Broadway show where, like, it's one of those, it looked like a sketch from Saturday Night Live. Like, it's not even real. I don't even know how that happened. We're going to move past that because I don't remember the details because I blocked it out.
Okay.
I got my Equity card doing Scooby-Doo, which was my first tour, which I booked like 5 months after living in New York.
Scooby-Doo was on Broadway?
That was just a tour.
It was just a show on tour.
By the way, when I got to New York to make money, I went to bartending school. After going to Northwestern University.
Oh, wow.
And graduating summa cum laude with a bachelor in science, I went to bartending school.
Graduated middle of your class.
Because I just had to get a job. And so I was bartending, and because I do believe that work begets work, no matter what kind of work it is.
Sure. Plus you get to meet people. And bartending is a little like acting, too.
There's something energetically I always used to tell my students and other people that are doing this, just work. It doesn't, even if it's not in your field, it feels like it's not connected, but there's something about your energy when you're kind of in the grind, and it just, I don't know. And so I was bartending, and then I went on tour to do Scooby-Doo, got my card, left Scooby-Doo.
What does that mean? Sorry, what is an equity card?
Okay, so to get in the union, you know, Broadway and Broadway tours are their union gigs, so you have to get in the union. And in order to do that, there's a couple different ways in. But one of them is to get a job through, like, an equity. If I butcher this, I apologize to people listening that are like, she's wrong. It's in a certain kind of theater that's a union theater that hire you. Or in my case, I got this job on this tour, which was an equity tour, and that just got me in the union.
So you're traveling through the U.S.?
Traveling through the U.S., playing ridiculous characters that we grew up with, like Daphne. Do you remember these? Like Velma?
Yeah, of course.
Like doing that. But I'm 21 and psyched, okay?
Who plays Scooby? Is there like a...
There's guy. Oh, my gosh. He was a dead ringer for Scooby-Doo.
No way.
Really?
Yes. I can't believe I'm telling you about this because this is one of the, again, so...
Oh, my God.
But it's part of the past,
I hope
right?
we have pictures of this.
And then, yeah, then I went back to New York, and the first big show I got was Hairspray. That happened soon after.
Wow. So that's quick then.
It was quick, relatively speaking, yeah. And it was the dream. It was an amazing moment.
I mean, it sounds very exciting. I'm excited right now for you.
That's really nice.
For you,
me too. I'm excited about in my past. Like, wow, that was a good time in my life.
But is it also intimidating?
Oh my gosh. When I think about the casting offices now, there's one office that's the biggest in New York for Broadway shows and for television too now, Bernard Telsey, the Bernie Telsey office. And when I think of it, I get Spilka stomach. Like my stomach gets like nervous butterflies, just recalling the office. Because
really?
It's so, yes, you get so,
so
nervous. It's so intense. And the energy, that nervous energy, way more in theater than in TV and film. Like when you have an audition for theater or for Broadway especially, and everyone's there and you have dance calls and you're all like in the room together and you just feed off that energy, it is intense. As a matter of fact, it's giving me anxiety right now.
Well,
it's like the epitome of competition, right?
It is everything about competition that is dreadful.
That she does not like.
And it's all your best friends, too, by the way. You're like, hey, girl. Hey, friend. It's all friends of yours.
It's
and
a tight-knit community, huh?
Yeah.
What about being on stage? How long did you prepare for Hairspray?
Actually, my... my journey into hairspray was crazy because they had just opened the I first did the first national tour, and they had just opened it, and this beautiful, talented woman got hurt, like, immediately. And I mean immediately. So I went and learned. They had 6 weeks to do the show and then, like, 10 days of tech, and I had 3 days to learn the entire score and learn all the choreography.
Whoa.
And it was madness. Again, thinking back, I can't believe it. But again, it was like just riding on fumes.
That's incredible. I'm just even trying to picture, because I don't sing. I sing, but I don't dance.
You do sing.
I don't dance. And trying to, you know, just picture just lines in a comedy or lines in a drama.
It's me and two other people in a room just pretending like there are 20 people on stage and where they are, and me just alone trying to navigate through that. And then I had one put in, which is what you call a rehearsal when it's just you and everyone. And it was nuts because I'd never done any of it with another human before.
Wow.
And then also you have on top of it quick changes, which is like one of those things behind the scenes that people aren't totally aware of.
Wardrobe changes?
Yes. Jersey Boys is way worse, but my quickest quick change was 15 seconds. Okay?
Oh, man.
And I mean,
how do you do it?
You walk off stage and you have, you don't leave the stage. You just walk into a wing. You have one woman changing your shoes. You flip your head over. One person is, I don't know why I said a woman. Usually your dresses are female if you're a female and right. male if you're a male. And then you have a hair person. You flip your head over. They take your wig off, put your wig on. And then you have someone unzipping your dress and putting, you have three or four people just doing everything for you as you stand there.
It's like
there.
A pit stop for a human being.
And then you turn around and just walk back on stage. That's the kind of stuff that's, like, nuts. And in New York, it's even crazier because when the theaters are really small and the backstage is really small.
Oh, there's no room.
There's no room. And your dressing room is three flights
up.
Yes, because everything's up. So nobody realizes. So when you're on tour, these big theaters around the country, there's, like, so much space and it's easy to get. You can run to your dressing room and grab something. And in New York, it's.
So do you zip back down out of breath? For your number?
You know, you can't go up the stairs. You just need to have everything. And if you don't.
Oh, it's all around you.
It's not there. Right?
Improvise.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Grab the person's next.
I don't know why in my head I always assume those quick changes are like, you just have layers and you take one off.
Yeah, it takes a village, honestly.
That's so
fascinating. But look, they're not all winner shows. I mean, I was in my first show on Broadway. I did the Hairspray tour and then I went into Hairspray on Broadway later. But in between that. My Broadway debut was with a show that closed within 2 months.
2 months after you came on the scene?
No, I was in the original company. I was in the original company. The whole thing you open the show, and it was a Beach Boys musical, and you open the show, and it's packed to the gills. And then as the weeks go by, you see the audience get smaller and smaller, and suddenly there's no one in the balcony.
Oh,
and
no.
Then you're like, oh, my God, this is not going well.
I think that's just my mom out there.
Exactly.
Do you have, do screw-ups happen on Broadway?
Oh, my Lord, do screw-ups happen. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
Actually, my mom was recalling this one time where there's so many to choose from, but what will happen if now when you go watch a show, just look for this. She was recalling there's this dodgeball scene I've seen people. There's one of the guys fell into the pit in the stage in Jersey Boys. Like, all kinds of things happened.
Into the orchestra?
Into like this trap door.
Ooh.
Sorry for laughing, but it was hysterical. He's fine. He's doing very well. But she recalls this time we were doing the dodgeball scene. We were all throwing these dodgeballs in Hairspray. And that the dodgeball just hit one of the characters just straight up in the face. And you see everyone in the cast facing the back and their shoulders just up and down, shaking. You can't see me, but I'm doing it right now. So it's just funny. Next time you go see a show, sometimes watching the people that aren't doing the lines or singing the lead solos, you can kind of see people messing about because – you do get bored doing 8 shows a week, and people are young and silly, and you can kind of sometimes catch things.
Yeah, you can catch it.
Yeah. So, like, make that a Where's Waldo? Find find the people messing around.
I do that all the time. I even do that in movies because I'm like, wait a second, continuity error. That was over there.
Before, yeah, it's kind of the same thing. And you can see, you'll see shoulders like kind of bouncing up and down, people laughing. And you're like, what's going on in that corner over there? Yeah, it's funny.
That would be, I think that would be my nightmare is how do you recover from something? Because I remember twice on stage in plays that I did, once a guy just like, for some reason,
the dark room, the black room.
What black room?
Well, that's where you go when everything goes dark and you don't know your lines or what's happening. You go into the dark room.
No, that didn't happen. He just skipped forward about three quarters of the way through Act One to his lines from the end of the act, and the person after him just instinctively went to her next line, and then was like, "Wait a second."
And now, where do you go?
Yeah, because they're at the end of the act, so somebody has to bring it back. Somebody eventually did, but it was, and everybody realized what happened. Except, I don't think the audience ever really came into
people, it. People are just on the ride with you. I will say, there's, you know, when you have someone kind of, one of the, my favorite actresses who was just kind of went up on a lyric, just gave me strong, like, just strong hmms, and just was like, "I'm going to push through this until a word comes to me," and we're like, okay, you get that. You go.
Yeah, it's, go for
you're
it.
Human and things happen.
I was in a play called I Hate Hamlet.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so I played a drunken character named Nick, who was sort of a takeoff from Santa Claus. And I'm standing in the middle of the stage, and I'm supposed to fall down these five steps, on my butt, bump, 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 bump. Practice it forever to do it without hurting, breaking my tailbone, and make it look really dramatic. And it happens with a huge thunder and lightning, right? So the thunder comes, the lightning comes, I clutch my chest, fall down the five steps. But the tech guy forgot right before all that happens, somebody walks in and a door closes, but there's no real door there. So it's just a sound effect. He walks in, door closes.
Okay.
So the guy walked in, tech guy forgot to hit the door closing. Okay. So I'm standing in the middle of the stage, ready for my big thing. And then I hear the noise and I clutch my chest and jump down in fear, but it's just a door closing. Click. And then I'm laying on the ground. Oh, and the thunder and lightning comes. And I have to, like, outdo myself.
Right. Now what? So, yeah. That's the thing. Especially those technical errors will get, you're all in it together.
Yeah. And there's adrenaline because you never know what's going to happen. The show must go on.
Correct.
I love that. How does that, because you came to LA and now you're all TV and stuff. How does that compare for you?
They're not even the same trade, I feel. That's my own opinion. It's so different that they just feel like two different jobs. Acting for film and television is just a completely different beast. I mean, you're not living on stage with other actors, just kind of in this world. You're action cut, it's all chopped up, it's just a lot more technical elements.
No live audience.
You're not rehearsing, huh?
No live audience.
Unless you're doing a multi-camera for TV.
Then there is.
Yeah, and actually I would say that's the closest thing to theater because you have that live audience and you have your blocking and you kind of do the scene and that feels more familiar coming from theater.
Yeah.
It did when I first came from theater. Now, I like not having the anxiety of being on stage, honestly. But I love them both. It's fun. It's just very different.
Yeah, I feel like that thrill, that energy, that, like you said, a lot of them are young. It's enjoyable when you're young.
Yeah.
And as you get older, I just wonder if it just gets...
It's a tough life. Your schedule is the opposite of everyone else in the world. You're working every night and on the weekends, and then your day off is Monday Tuesday afternoon. And because people that are working 9-to-5 jobs are coming to see shows at night and on weekends. So it's a hard thing to maintain as you get older, and it's a hard life.
Do you feel a void when a show is over?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of feelings. Relief, excitement, sadness, nostalgia. It's all kind of there. And again, for me, a lot of it's community. And you're saying goodbye to this group. It'll never kind of be that again. Hmm. Yeah.
How about singing? Do you ever, jump in off key?
Jumping off key?
Yeah, like you go for your thing and you're like, no.
Never, not a day. Never. How dare you?
That's why.
What is this? I'm walking out of the studio?
So it has. Okay.
No.
That's a fear for me singing. I'll like jump in and be two octaves too high for some reason.
I don't typically sing unless I'm prepared and rehearsed.
Yeah.
I don't, you know. So if there's any fear of me coming in on somewhere wrong, generally I won't do that.
I fear you. Do you have a favorite TV appearance so far?
Gosh, they're so different. I did enjoy doing, I love doing Life in Pieces, which is on CBS. Mm. I just love the character. She's the worst, and that's always the most fun. She's just that woman, that neighbor, that mom, that's just like, you imagine her with like a glass of white wine in her hand, and it's just like, hi, you look amazing. So good to see you. And I just love her.
Aww.
She's my favorite. And I love the whole cast. So, yeah.
So fun.
So it's so fun. It's not work. I mean, let's be real.
Well, it's amazing. I love what I do also. Like, I don't really, in the morning, I'm like, ugh, another day at work. And I work sometimes 10 or 12 hours.
You work so hard.
And the actors do too. But it's just like, I don't consider it, most of what I do work. There's like the paperwork side, the insurance side.
Yeah, you got, yeah, all that. I don't consider it work either. I feel like I get paid to play.
It's amazing to be in a field that you just really love.
Right.
All right. You got, I can't help but notice a little bump growing in your belly.
A little bump?
Well,
gosh, God bless you.
My big bump.
He called it a little bump.
And I want to find out more about your pregnancy and how you're getting ready for birth. But first, we're going to take a little break, and we'll come right back with Jackie Seiden. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, with co-host Kristen today.
Hi.
And our guest, Jackie Seiden.
Hi,
Z's. Welcome back, Jackie.
Thanks.
My goodness, you are an actress. You say actress, not actor.
Either one. I'm not precious about
it. I know. I always pick up on it, though, because fewer and fewer people are saying actress.
Oh, yeah. I do say actor. Yeah, that's right.
Give me a second. Multi-talented, because theater and small screen and big screen, and also you sing and you dance and you act, and you've had incredible roles from Hairspray to Jersey Boys, and then you came to Los Angeles and worked with Clint Eastwood, Gary Marshall, and Adam Sandler. What, you said Gary Marshall brought you here?
Yes, Gary. Oh man, I miss him too. He is the reason I'm in LA. He bought me out of my Hairspray contract to do Happy Days at his theater, the Falcon Theater, which is now the Gary Marshall Theater. That was a big
deal.
Where
is that?
It's in Burbank.
Oh,
wow.
And it's $35 a show, but he paid to break my contract in Hairspray.
Wow. So he really wanted you.
And I came here, and then I was here.
How long did that go on for?
It was just a couple, like 6 weeks.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't know. He ended up becoming this amazing mentor, as everyone that meets him will tell you. And we did, what was it called? New Year's Eve. I was in that movie with him.
Yes.
And he directed. He's just an amazing human, a very wonderful patron, family man, loyal.
Friend. And he obviously felt the same way about you.
Yeah, we had a great relationship.
Dragging you out here from New York.
He did.
But now I feel like the biggest role is yet to come.
Always.
With this baby brewing inside you.
Yes.
So tell me about your pregnancy. How has it been for you?
Very textbook.
Really?
Yes. First 3 months, very sick. Then second trimester, feeling great. Like $1 million. Couldn't be better. Then third trimester, as you know, my back starts going.
Yeah. Lucky for me.
The reflux.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's just very textbook, which I think is good.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, first trimester, nauseous and low energy.
Nauseous to the point, in the whole myth of morning sickness.
It was in the end of the day.
Give me a break. All 24 hours a day, meaning if you fall asleep, you wake up nauseous. Mm. There's no respite.
Ugh, that sounds terrible.
Recalling it is making me nauseous. And I didn't actually ever throw up, which almost makes it worse. I was just...
Oh, really? Are you a non-thrower-upper?
I am.
Like,
again, because of the singing, which you know, because you're a big singer.
Yeah.
I don't want the acids in my throat, so I'll do whatever I can to make it not happen.
I literally was just at a birth this weekend with somebody who would not allow herself to throw up, and it did not work well for her. Like, she ended up having to take...
She was trying to
repress it. Yeah, like, when she would relax into her contractions, it made her feel nauseous, so she wouldn't relax into her contractions.
And, please don't be me.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. She just took a shot of Zofran, and the nausea went away.
Oh, there you go.
So...
Well, so then she could relax and breathe.
Yeah,
it's so important, the breathing.
Midwives say you can like puke a centimeter. So I thought it would be actually great if she could just let it go.
By the way, she would have, as we know, it feels better to
throw up.
Yeah, yes. You feel relief. But it's violent. Throwing up is violent. It's brutal. Anyway, so I wouldn't let myself throw up.
My kids throw up in the most beautiful way.
Easy.
Like when they're sick, yeah, they just open their mouth and
without
blah.
Fear.
Yeah.
I think it's the trauma of it being older, knowing it just makes it worse.
I also think it's a little bit of a control thing.
No, it's the acids.
For you, it's the acid? No control thing?
No, I don't mind. I just worry about it, like burning my
throat. Burning your throat. That part I understand. Some adults have, they don't want to throw up because they don't want to let go
of
control.
Oh, gosh, no. I when I do throw up, I'm so relieved.
You feel much better.
At that point, I'm like, well, it is what it is. Yeah.
My kids couldn't care less. They throw up like very peacefully. And I'm like, oh, is everything okay? Like, Dad, you're blocking the screen. I can't see the TV.
They moved on. They're fine.
They don't care.
So, yeah, that first trimester, brutal.
And then were you working at all during?
Yes. Yes.
That must be challenging.
Let me tell you what else is real. Pregnancy brain.
Oh, you forget stuff.
I don't know what is happening.
Yeah.
I don't know where we are. I don't know what day it is.
I don't even know how I got here.
I am there.
But that's from working with pregnant women.
I have
secondhand
contagious.
Pregnancy brain. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I did Modern Family.
Oh, Modern Family.
Pregnant.
Were you supposed to be pregnant in the show?
Or? No,
no,
so early
so
they
early,
would
know.
Yeah, yeah. Although I have three kids on the show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And you were pregnant in real life.
Yes.
How do you do that nauseous and low energy? Did people know? Did your...
Boy, you just push through. I'm professional. You're so happy to be there. You just do your job.
Did the other people around you know?
No.
Nobody knew?
No, oh, so really.
You can't even talk about it?
No. I didn't talk about
happy
it.
Happy face?
It was... I was so psyched. You know, adrenaline is a real thing if you're, like, excited. The second you're working...
It shuts off.
And then the second
you're
back
like,
in your trailer, then you want to die. Yeah.
You're like, give me something soft.
Right. You're like, I'm going to die now.
Yeah. It's something magical about becoming somebody else. You like really become somebody else.
You really do.
And then you're back to yourself.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to get back into acting.
You should just come to your practice and give yourself a different name and pretend. Just...
Yeah. I get another fake ID.
Right.
I'm Edward.
Dr. Edward.
People
Dr.
may
Edward.
Complain. They're
why
like,
not?
Dr. Edwards. Dr. Berlin.
Yeah.
I don't know. He just make up some story about what happened.
I'm not an actor, but I play one at my doctor's office. What second trimester, lots of energy, big
lots
energy.
Lots of feeling good. I also worked. Okay, so I'm a runner.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran 3 miles 3 times a week up until 5.5 months. And that's wow. when I started to feel sharp pains. And I thought, okay, my body's telling me we're done.
Slow down.
So now, ever since then, I walk an hour every day.
Okay.
Wow. So
I'm
still doing
that. Is walking boring for you?
Walking can be boring.
How do you keep it interesting? Well, I'm saying if you're a runner.
Yes. No,
it's like all of a sudden watching something in slow motion.
I do everything. I listen to music, which I love. I walk in the neighborhood, which is more interesting.
I have a good podcast for you to listen to.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Let me guess what it is.
Yeah.
I have a treadmill and I'll watch TV. I mean, I'll just do anything to distract myself. I talk on the phone, you know, make calls, whatever it is, just to make that hour go by.
I would, but when I'm just walking, I'm so out of breath, I can't even talk on the phone.
Well, then you
it's
just
true.
Keep walking. Yeah, well, you keep walking.
Try to walk. That's how oh,
really?
I am.
See,
right
that's...
now I'm working out my
This is your
vocal
workout
cord.
For the You have a one-year-old, and you're in school full-time, and you moonlight as a podcast
I mean, you guys are the busiest yeah. people in the world.
And
I
you're
don't know
a doula
when.
Now.
You'd have to get up at 3 a.m. to give yourselves time to walk. I have to say, I do think it's helped me a lot, though. This circulation, and I feel strong.
Yeah, and you
but
are
it's not,
strong.
It's not a rigorous walk. It's just a walk.
But
you know?
Yeah, like you said, it gets your blood flowing.
Exactly.
Like that's how your body like uses hormones to find out what's happening.
That's when my back actually feels the best.
When you're walking.
Yeah, because my blood's going, and then I stretch after, and it's been awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Are you doing other types of exercise?
Just prenatal yoga.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Were you a yoga person before pregnancy?
I was, yeah. I love yoga.
And are you doing pregnancy-specific classes now?
Yes.
How do they compare to non-prenatal yoga for you?
Well, the regular yoga is definitely more rigorous and a lot more inversions and core work. And in the prenatal yoga classes, there's a huge focus on it's much softer, gentler, a lot of good stretching of the hips specifically, mm-hmm. and the breathing. There's focus on breathing in all of yoga, which is why it's so great. But I almost feel like I'm in training for my contractions in this prenatal yoga class because we talk about what it feels like and breathing through it and it's been really nice.
It's nice. It's like a community there.
Again, there you go. You'll see a common thread. There's a community there. Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's
a lot
cool
of cat
that,
and cow, like things that are good for your spine and moving around, you know.
Yeah.
No twisting in prenatal yoga. Yeah, stuff like that.
I think it's cool that you can appreciate running, which is so active and intense, and then also yoga, which
Well, that was my exercise regime, was running 3 times a week, and then the other 2 days was yoga. So it was running and then stretching and breathing.
Right.
Running, and it's just to try to balance.
Sort of feels like jumping into the cold pool and then going into the hot tub.
It's kind of exactly like that.
Thank you very much.
Metaphorically, yeah. That's
the first good analogy I've had all year.
It won't be the last.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Third trimester now.
Kill me.
How many weeks are you?
Just murder me.
Now.
I am 33, going to 34 weeks, 33
a little bit.
Weeks.
And you have a bunch of friends who all were pregnant.
I'm in a group of 10 girls, and they've actually all had their babies. But it's been incredibly educational for me because I've learned everything. I feel super prepared, and I knew nothing.
Going into it, you didn't know anything?
I really didn't. My sister has 4 kids, but in our culture, we don't, as a village, come and take care of the children. We're just like, congrats. Here's like a basket of stuff and here's some lunch.
Yeah, well, my brother had a kid. I just texted him. Way to go.
Way to go. And she doesn't live here. So my brother has 2 kids too, but I was never lived in the same. It's just different. But now being in this group and all being pregnant together, I've really watched, heard every birth story. I didn't know what a mucus plug was. I didn't know what Pitocin was. I didn't know what anything was. And now, I feel like I've been going to grad school for birth.
Did you decide to take any educational classes or anything?
Yes. We took a lactation class.
Mm-hmm.
We took a birthing class, a weekend workshop birthing class.
When you say we, are you saying you did these with your husband?
My husband and some mutual friends of ours.
Oh, at the same time?
Yes.
What was his role in the lactation class?
Was he in the lactation class?
Okay.
He was.
Oh, yeah. How do you see his role in breastfeeding? Yeah.
Just to support and listen and have knowledge. He really, you know, I feel like so many of these guys now are just kind of like Renaissance men. They all want to be involved. All the husbands of these girls, they're into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Out of all the classes, some of our dads who also come into our practice, that's the one that weirds them out a little bit. I don't know why.
The lactation?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of boobs.
A lot of boobs.
Yeah. A lot of boobs. And then
and
the
like
guys are like
positioning. And like and hold and here and
yeah. Yeah, in a very like, non-sexual, like, yes, yeah. Exactly. And then the guys, I think, feel uncomfortable. Like, is it okay that I'm looking at this, like, these woman's nipples? Like, I don't know.
What it is. And yeah. The lactation educators are just so used to it. It's just a matter of just grab it and, you know. Yeah.
Can I tell you, I'm really modest and really shy, and I have to, this whole process is going to have to get me out of my shell.
Break the shell for you.
Yeah, I'm very, you know this, I've said this to you. Mm-hmm. I'm super modest.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm the girl, like, I've been married now for 3 years, but I get out of the shower and I, like, immediately wrap a towel around me and, like, I just, yeah, I'm super modest.
Yeah, I'm like that with the dog. I don't know why. I come out of the shower and the dogs are like, hey!
I did that as a thing. I don't think I'm ready to poop on a table in front of people. Like, I don't they say it's not a big deal, but this is like, oh my God, I'm going to just be, it's all going to happen.
Scary. I could see why it sounds uncomfortable.
Right.
But then, in practically speaking, just having watched so many people go through it, it just becomes a non-issue. I can't explain exactly. First of all.
No, I believe you.
And you're worried about it now, but I remember being worried about it. Yeah. And then after, I think it was like days later, and I was like, hey, did I even?
Right, because in the movie, you don't care.
Then you're just stuck.
I have people, you know, I do body work at birth, and I have people on a semi-regular basis. I come by the hour. I don't come for the whole thing. Right. So I come when you want me and leave when you don't want me. And a common birth plan is, help me get to pushing and then get out of there. I don't want you there when I'm pushing. Totally fine. I have no problem with that. But at least half of the people that say that when it's time to push, I'm like, you're amazing. You got to 10. You're going to push. I'm going now. They're like, you are not effing going anywhere.
Yeah, of course. Like,
but you said you didn't want me here when I don't care.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
It just, there's so much adrenaline and energy and the whole thing. I think it'll break that.
And you're in the bubble at that point, and you've helped. There's a connection, and you've helped these women
to get
to that point.
Far,
so it's like, help me get through this now.
Like now you're like their talisman.
Exactly.
You're my point.
Led me to the mountain. Like, we've gone up the mountain. Now you have to stay with me.
And also, the setting that we create sometimes around birth is so sterile and cold that for some reason it actually feels comforting to have a big hairy Orthodox man doula come and rub your shoulders.
You're a very comforting presence.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thanks.
It's true.
So now that you've watched all your friends go through it and you're getting ready for this big, you know, journey of your lifetime, how are you getting ready? And what do you like?
I'm trying to heal my hemorrhoids. Let's just get very real.
Did I give you the link to the cream, the Chinese ointment?
No, you're going to have to do that ASAP.
I'm going to text to you right
so
now.
I'm just going to keep it real for your listeners. You know what I'm saying? We're healing those because I know that's going to be real bad after.
You know what the great thing about hemorrhoids is?
What?
At least you're not a perfect a-hole.
Oh.
See?
I will jump over this table.
Thank you.
yes, so bleeding from my butt stinks, but that's been way better. I've been treating and I feel much better.
Oh, good.
Again, the walking. Going to keep doing that. Not going to stop. We're going to keep doing that. I do it with a support band on now.
Oh, to hold the belly?
Yes.
I need one.
And honestly, I just try to sleep when I can. I just feel like that's the only thing I can do is try to just be as rested as I can.
Yeah. I mean, you described third trimester.
Oh, and acupuncture and CU, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that.
If you have to.
And therapy.
Oh.
These are all the ways I'm preparing. I'm just telling you.
It's getting your mind and body ready.
Yes.
Do you have a birth plan?
I have birth intentions.
I like that
word. That's nice.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not married to anything. Whatever is best for baby on the day is okay. I'm not going
to. So you're open.
I am. Whatever needs to happen, I'm okay with. I don't want to be emotionally attached to anything.
To one way or another.
Yes. But my intention is to hopefully go in natural and get as far as I can on my own with the help of my doula and see if I can go all the way. And if I can't, that's okay.
Or don't want to.
Right. Or if I'm too exhausted, I just don't know what my narrative is going to be. Am I going to be in labor for an insane amount of hours and just be so exhausted I need an epidural? whatever it is, it's okay. But my goal is to get as far as I can on my own.
Okay.
That's really nice.
I love that way.
Me too.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, that was your birth plan?
I tried to be as open as possible. I mean, I really didn't want a C-section for my own selfish reasons because if I did, I wouldn't be able to keep going with school. I'd have to take a break.
And also, and it's a major surgery. So, I want to try to avoid a C-section. But if I need one,
then
no shame in that. It's a birth. You know, my sister 100%. Had 3 C-sections.
And they're necessary at sometimes.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
One thing I want to avoid, and I don't even want to say because I don't want to put it out there, and I'm going to try to talk to my baby about this, is I don't want to, the only thing I would hope to not do is be in labor for a day and then go into some kind of duress and then have to do the C-section. That just seems like a lot.
I have a documentary film called Trial of Labor. Mm-hmm. It's about vaginal birth after cesarean. And it's the only people who talk in it are the 4 women who are pregnant for the 2nd or 3rd time trying to have their first vaginal birth. So previously only cesareans. And when I did that film and we interviewed people for it, and then since the film came out and I talk and present it and sometimes at Grand Rounds we show it at hospitals and large crowds of people come, the conversation afterwards always is, and I really have met only very few people who had a C-section after labor. So they labored and for one reason or another had a cesarean. And then the second time they scheduled the cesarean, almost all of those women say they wish they would have labored before having the second cesarean, even knowing they were going to have a C-section. And I can't tell you exactly
why. Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's incredibly comforting and eye-opening. I've never heard – that's fascinating.
It was really eye-opening to me.
Where they wanted to labor before. So what you're saying to me is actually that's not a horrible thing for you.
No, like if you're if you're trying to have a vaginal birth after cesarean, the number one outcome is you labor and then have a vaginal birth.
Right.
Number two outcome is you just have the cesarean with no labor.
Right.
And no vaginal birth. And the worst outcome would be if you labor and then have to have a cesarean anyway. Right.
Right.
These women overwhelmingly said, again, the ones who experienced labor the first time and then had a C-section.
We're having epiphanies.
I know.
I wonder if it's like the connection thing. Because you know, you're experiencing that, you know that that's your natural progression. And then if you just miss that, it's that's their option.
Well, talk about a transitionary phase.
That's where I was going to go with this. When they say that having a contraction is sort of almost like a defibrillator where it's activating the baby's senses.
Yeah.
And to have those contractions.
And the hormones that run through your body during labor. And it's just a process.
The whole thing. Yeah.
There's labor and birth, whether the birth is vaginal or cesarean. I'm sure there's women who've had long, difficult labors and then had a C-section and wish they never had that labor.
You just made me feel a lot better about that, honestly. Yeah.
But I do think that's true. Even when I'm VBACing now based on that with clients, and we talk about it, I ask them if they see value in labor by itself. And if they do, then it's labor and whatever kind of delivery follows. But you got the benefit of labor either way.
Right. Hmm. And you're right. There is that transitional aspect for especially for the baby who's changing worlds.
Yeah, it's a totally different world.
Yeah.
So your birth intention is just go into labor spontaneously, labor as long as you feel okay.
I mean, look, we don't know what if I'm late and I need to be induced. I mean, there could be millions of different things.
Totally.
Right. But my intention is hopefully I can just go into labor and have a natural labor. And then everything else we'll just deal with as it comes.
I feel like the birth plan, or in your case, intention,
is
really just page one of a flow chart.
It kind of is.
And there's a whole birth flow chart that always ends in a cesarean birth, meaning, like you said, what if my water breaks and there's meconium? What if my...
Exactly.
What if the baby ends up breech? What if there's, you know...
Well, if the baby ends up breech, you're going to be trying to turn.
You got a problem.
I'm going to be in your office, I'll solve it.
Right now.
Check out the BY. Dr. B revolves it. Anyway, so hopefully you won't be.
As a matter of fact, can we just take a pause? Can you check her right now? I forgot to ask you. I wanted to know where she's laying.
We'll take a peek.
Okay.
So it's a flow chart. And if X, Y, or Z happens, and if you're suffering or you're in too much pain or you don't want to keep going, then you'll get this pain relief option or that pain relief option. And if you need to, of course, you'll have a C-section.
I just want to be prepared for the unexpected. If I feel like if I'm attached to something, then I'm just basically setting myself up to be disappointed or upset over something that is out of my control. And I want to be open.
Sure. And we have a lot of great options. So why not
exactly
keep them all open for yourself? How do you deal with intensity in general, with pain?
You know what? I don't know.
Really?
I really don't, because sometimes it depends on the kind of pain.
Right?
Yeah.
You had it. What does it feel like to you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it wasn't really fair because most of my labor, the baby was posterior.
Oh, right.
So I didn't really know, and I couldn't sit down. So for me, the pain was just like, I didn't really understand why it was so painful. Because for me, I was an athlete my whole life. So I was like, felt like I would be just prepared. Water polo.
Wow.
So like intense, you know, getting hit in the face all the time. And then I did martial arts for like my whole life.
It's so a tough cookie, this one.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to be so prepared. Right. And then I felt really intense pain, like a pressure that I couldn't give into. And so I just felt really not prepared.
I see that sometimes.
Is that like, scary?
Whoa.
It's in the moment where you're
confusing.
More confusing. Yeah. Like, how do I, because I want to manage things, right?
And I think
I just also had other extenuating circumstances. My water didn't break spontaneously. When I got checked, it broke. And there was meconium. So then I was like, okay, this is serious, you know, I had like a time frame.
Yeah.
So I think kind of all of those things made me just feel very anxious. And I didn't have a doula, but I had an amazing husband who was like my biggest cheerleader.
Aww.
And he actually helped me in all of my really intense moments calm down.
Wow.
But I don't really ever think it was the pain, like, or it was like super painful. It was more like I didn't know how to help, or I didn't know how, I couldn't relax because I was so concerned.
Yeah.
And so
I think that 90% of my job as a doula is to help you feel safe.
Yes.
When foreign things are happening, you feel intensity you've never felt before, and your body freaks out. I must be in danger. I've never felt this before.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you help yourself feel safe? But when you don't have normal, like, I will say textbook. Hopefully for you, it'll be textbook like everything else.
We'll see.
You don't have textbook onset of labor, or the baby's in a position that gives you back labor, which tends to be a lot more intense than typical labor.
That's what I've heard.
And you just don't understand, like, why can't I do? Why is this not going the way I expected it to go? But that's why Jackie has an open birth plan.
Well, I will tell you, my mom's story is pretty funny.
I hope
it's like hers. You know, my parents were very young, and then they had us, and you had to pay per night to be in the hospital.
Oh.
And so my mom went into labor, but they sat in the car till 12:01. And then they went and admitted themselves, and then she had me at 4:30.
That's crazy.
That's so great.
Just sat in the car, just watched the clock, waiting for it to be the next day because they didn't want to be for the night.
I have the weirdest things happen like
so cool.
that.
Yeah.
Somebody will be due like December 28th, and they'll do everything under the sun to get that baby out before the deductible resets. Or like, you know, it'll be like we're moving into the year of the monkey, and I don't want a monkey, so I don't want a Sagittarius. So,
right, so they start doing squats.
They try to
and
hold
like,
it in. Like, like one woman talked about trying to use a cork.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't recommend it, but it could be a new Shark Tank product.
Yeah.
But maybe, hey, look, if I can have my mom's labor, 4 hours.
Amazing. After you sit in the car for a while.
Maybe genetics. It will work out.
What do you find comforting? Like when you're feeling, what makes you feel safe?
I'll probably be singing music.
I wondered about that.
Yes. Singing also, as you know,
and
I think we talked about this.
Can you record some if you sing during labor?
No.
Aww.
No, I'm kidding. I wrote a song for the baby. This is actually, so I had a miscarriage and And in between the miscarriage and my pregnancy, I got very lucky. I got pregnant right away after, but I didn't know I was pregnant. I was very sad, and I wrote this song kind of calling the baby home to me.
The miscarriage baby?
Just my baby that's meant to be my baby
in
this
baby.
World. I was like, I'm ready for you to come. And I didn't – oh, I have to tell you this. How I found out I was pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote this song, and then a week later, I had a dream that this woman came up to me. A psychic woman who was blind walks up to me and says, I have a message for you. Are you open to receiving a message? And I said, oh, yeah, work, babies, whatever. And she puts her hand on me in the dream and just opens her eyes and says, your baby girl has arrived.
What?
And I woke up at 2:30 in the morning sobbing. And I didn't want to wake up my husband because I just wanted to let him sleep, work or whatever. And I was like, what? Wait, what? That was so vivid and crazy and crazy. And no, I can't. It's too early to get a test. I can't. And then I went to CVS the second I woke up. And I took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant. And with a girl. And I, for sure, I was having a boy.
Holy cow.
It was the weirdest thing.
That's intense.
Anyway, that was my
story. Are you a dreamer? Do you dream in general?
I know all my dreams. But this was vivid. This was like a crazy, like I can see her and feel her.
Well, I am. I'm like goosebumps and shaking.
Your baby girl has arrived. And I don't know. Just so you know, I had a wonky genetic test in my first trimester.
With this pregnancy?
With this pregnancy. So we weren't sure. The initial test said that she had a single X chromosome.
Oh.
And
XO?
Just XO, right. Mm-hmm. So it turns out she's XX, but we went a couple months not knowing. I had to get an amnio.
Wow.
And I guess that's kind of what the definition of faith is. I just had faith everything was going to be okay one way or the other because of this dream.
And the song.
I knew she was going to come. I know that I just felt like she was coming. So however she was coming and it was going to be okay.
That's really
amazing. I don't know. It was kind of
I mean, what a road to you have the pregnancy, then a miscarriage, which is very tough by itself.
Yeah.
Emotionally. Then the dream, and
then that kind of carried me through. I mean, it was very and having that unknown, and I know a lot of women experience this because these tests have such high rate of false positives.
Yes.
So 90%, by the way.
False positive.
Yes, and can I say that these companies kind of downplay the number of false positives?
Of course you can. They don't sponsor us.
And they won't. No.
They won't now.
Or how hard it is, because then they'll go in and do the ultrasound, and it's so hard to see the actual thickness
and
stuff. And so it's just like, it's
a
very,
lot
very
of
difficult.
Women deal with this. I know it.
It's so hard.
And you have to wait till that amnio. And anyway.
You did an amnio?
An amnio.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
I have to tell you, they put the needle in. And they said, it's not going to hurt. You're not going to feel a thing. Just let us know if you feel something weird. And it hurt real, real bad.
Really?
And they were like, okay, something was wrong. And then they had to do it again. Wow. And that time I didn't feel anything.
Oh.
So that's I didn't even know if they like nicked. I don't know. And
oh, my goodness.
And the nurse said, I wonder what you're like at the dentist.
What?
Oh,
because you were squirming from the pain?
But yeah.
Of something that
wasn't
supposed to hurt?
Actually, to circle back to your question, people and the bedside manners is a real thing. That was not a great moment for me because my mom was there and it's emotional and it's
scary.
Scary, and there is a risk.
There's a risk of causing a miscarriage.
Exactly, and there was blood in the sample, probably because
they
pinned
something.
Me like a pin cushion. But the second one, I didn't feel at all. So
if it goes the way it's supposed to feel.
Yes. So for anyone listening, if you get one, you really can't feel it. Something went wrong in that first one. I don't know what happened.
That's so mean.
Wow.
It was really mean.
I feel like people are so like not sensitive to pregnant ladies.
I was like, really? That's so you asked me how I am with pain.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. How are you at the dentist's office?
I was just going to say nerve pain and dentist. That is my no. I can't.
You don't like it.
But I can go into.
But this is not nerve pain. This is more of a natural intensity that if it goes textbook, will start very tolerable and build up. And as it builds up, you're going to build up also your hormones and your natural painkillers.
I can go in and breathe through. Oh, that's what I was going to say too about singing. When you sing, it relaxes everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you relax everything except your diaphragm basically, essentially.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling I'm going to be able to breathe through and just ride. I just want to ride these waves. I think it's going to be all right.
I think it's going to be just awesome. Whatever it is, like you said, with an open birth plan, you just take it moment by moment.
Which that's all you can do, one moment
at a time. Have you recorded that song?
I think I might record it, but just for...
Oh, not for us.
Maybe for you.
All right.
Yeah. I can't get through it without crying, but.
I mean, I'm a little teary-eyed just from all the things you just said in the last few minutes.
That's
and you're so positive. And you're, you like, I'm face blind, but when I picture you, I just see like a big smile and cheerful eyes.
Oh
like,
my gosh, that is like,
and then you just talk about all these things that you've gone through with this pregnancy and on this journey. It just makes I'm shocked.
I can't wait for the after because I feel like she's gonna just it's gonna be just more excitement.
It's so funny the pregnancy brain because I almost completely just wasn't even thinking about all the trauma that we went through in the first trimester.
Right, you're like, oh, it was just textbook.
I had a miscarriage, I was at the Grove in Los Angeles getting a phone call that the baby was healthy and okay, and I'm just sobbing in the middle of a restaurant, like hiccuping and in front of my sister who came to visit just to make sure I was okay. Just, you know. I will say, too, I don't pray, really. And I was praying to God. I said, I'll give up anything. I'll give up my career. I'll give up anything to make this baby healthy.
Gosh.
And that's how I knew I was ready to be a mom.
I cannot wait for that moment where you'll put this baby on you.
I can't wait. I'm ready.
All right. You're the first. You are a trendsetter on our before and after
series. This is really exciting.
I'm so excited.
Me too.
And, you guys, wait till you hear the birth plan. It's going to be what is it going to be? Like, we don't know what my birth narrative is going to be. It's going to be so interesting after having this conversation. What is it?
You guys are going to write it together.
Yeah, and then
maybe I'll write a song about it.
Please do.
It won't be nearly as good as your song.
That's not true.
Jackie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure.
And Kristen, thanks for being here again. And at home, thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy podcast. Share us with your friends and visit us online for access to our blog, documentaries, and our series on YouTube called The Real Midwives of Los Angeles, plus other pregnancy and parenting resources at informedpregnancy.com. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.